God forbid, sir, but you should. You are the breath of our nostrils. Upon this, the king looked at the Bishop of Winchester, Andrews. Well, my lord, what say you? Dr. Andrews replied evasively, sir, I have no skill to judge of parliamentary matters. But the king persisted. No put-offs, my lord. Answer me presently. Then, sir, said this rude bishop, I think it lawful for you to take my brother Neil's money, for he offers it. You want me to continue?
Yes, sir.
Why did not the news media, with their self-righteous judgment, boycott the marriage of the prince with such a history of churchmanship as this? Because they're hypocrites. They think they've got the church in America under their foot and on the run, and they're going to brainwash you straight to hell. Your right to give is absolute in the Constitution, and your right to give is a testimonial of the value of the God-given gifts of ministry are your absolute right. So what if one stumbles and falls? Who doesn't? In any profession. I remember when an anchorman here in one of the network stations got arrested a few years ago for kiting checks. They didn't give nearly as much attention to that as they're given to this preacher that hasn't yet been proven to do anything. And he's only admitted the one thing 7 years ago in a motel in Florida. Something's wrong with the abusive system, and it's time for people of integrity to cry out about it. I'm doing it. This ministry is based upon you testifying to the value of the teacher. Oakland, Doc, since they're talking so much about Jim Baker, what about the newscaster who dressed so nicely as a woman, got in a car wreck, and when they took her to the hospital, they found she was a man? Boy, the news media sure hushed that one up quick. What about the Pope? That fooled everybody. Until in a procession, she dropped a child. I mean, she had a baby. All hidden under her robes until the moment of delivery. They even had a statue to her in Rome. And that, about as much as anything else, upset Luther. Paxton, Florida. This evening on the news, I noticed they stumbled onto a deficit in the teaching system on values. We have a saying down south, a blind hog will eventually stumble upon an acorn. Alameda, Doc, do you know why the specific books of the Apocrypha were eliminated? I'll get to that. Puritans were responsible for it more than anyone else. Then the American and British Bible societies left them out. Was Enoch ever considered worthy of the canon? Tertullian fought very hard to have him included. The apocalyptic view of Enoch had as much influence on the New Testament expectancy of the Perusia and the first generation apostolic lifestyle as any other single book. And Jude, ultimately included in the canon, quotes directly from Enoch. So by inference, Jude puts a canonical aura onto Enoch. Yes, it was considered. It was left out when the mistaken view of the first generation Christians that the second coming of Christ was immediate produced a disillusionment when the first generation died and it didn't happen. In fact, the Montanus stated where the second coming would occur and where the New Jerusalem was going to come down, and went there expecting it. So the disillusionments with the second coming that had underestimated the time span of the gap while God dealt with the wild olive branch, as Paul calls the Gentile church, caused them to almost excise all apocryphal literature. And had it not been decided that, not apocryphal but apocalyptic, had it not been decided that the Apocalypse of John was written by an apostle, it would have been left out, and it was put at the tail end of the canon. And not given much attention. It earned its place because they had adopted the premise if an apostle wrote it, it was to be included. Otherwise, they took out the apocalyptic literature. I'm reading from, to take a little break from the heavy 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 4th century church history we've been teaching. I've jumped on up to the 15th and 16th, or rather the 16th and 17th centuries, the King James Version of the Bible. Reading from Translators Revived, Biographical Notes of the King James Version Bible Translators by Alexander McClure. These were not the elders around Moses. Just thought I'd say that. The King James was not given by angels to Moses or Adam. And it's accomplishing the gestalt that I'm wanting to communicate. The church has not always had poverty-stricken idiots as its leaders. Lancelot Andrewes, ultimately appointed chairman of the Committee of Ten, the first committee to deal with the first five books of Moses and on into Kings. Born at London in 1565, one of the first Greek scholarships of Pembroke Hall in the University of Cambridge. And once a year at Easter, he used to pass a month with his parents. He'd find a master and learn a new language, one he wasn't familiar with until, with his vacation time 1 month a year, he mastered most of the European languages. I'd read of his appointments clear up to Westminster, favorite of Queen Elizabeth, and with King James, he stood in higher favor than he'd done with Elizabeth. He didn't die poor. He established fellowships at his school when he died, bequeathed 300 folio volumes, which weren't cheap. One of the comments I was on when I quit reading, high in the favor of King James, the crack-brained king, this writer says, who scarce knew how to restrain his profaneness and levity under the most serious circumstances. Once, always a jealous stickler for his prerogatives, I can read this again, can I? Was in those days trying to raise a revenue without parliamentary authority. All church leaders have had to worry with raising revenue. King James was head of the church, as the current Queen of England is, as Prince Charles will be. Now, the way they pay attention to the shopping that Princess Di does, do they realize that's the wife of the head of the Church of England to be? She wears more hats than are necessary to keep your head warm. When the press follows them around, chattering adulation as they tour the world with their yachts, and are the guests at $25,000 a plate dinners in Florida, are they aware that that's the head of the Church of England to be and his wife? I mean, what's fair is fair. Oh, well, you know, yeah, that's different. No, it isn't. The people of PTL made Jim and Tammy their mannequin kings and queens. That's what this is all about. And their right to do it's absolute. Now, the other prince, if something happens to Charles, will be the head of the church. You know, it's hardly fair to get on to Tammy. Just because Fergie didn't need a boob job and Tammy thought she did, let's be fair. I mean, I haven't seen Fergie all her life, but has it always been that way? Or... I mean, if that's what we're supposed to concern ourselves with about church leaders, let's be fair. Do you reckon there's any gold in the Vatican? I mean, they're even cleaning the painting of Michelangelo. Why don't they sell it and give the money to the poor? You know, I'm tired of these wooden-headed members of the press dumping on us their value system. The papers were full of the guy today who provides the clothes and dresses, the anchor men. Why don't they go to CNR and give the difference to the poor? I don't see them doing anything but sit on their butt. That's what Jimmy did. In love with either one of the commodities. I just think what's fair is fair. So the king and head of the Church of England said, "My lords, cannot I take my subjects' money when I want it without all this formality in Parliament?" The Bishop of Durham agreed with him, "God forbid, sir, but you should. You are the breath of our nostrils." On this, the king looked at the Bishop of Winchester, Lancelot Andrews, the one that is one of the King James translators, said, "Well, my lord, what say you?" Dr. Andrews replied evasively, "Sir, I have no skill to judge of parliamentary matters." Now, the Bishop of Durham was Bishop Neal. And Andrews says, "Sir, I have no skill to judge of parliamentary matters." But the king persisted, "No put-offs, my lord, answer me presently." "Then, sir," said this rude bishop, "I think it lawful for you to take my brother Neil's money, for he offers it." Even the petulant king was usually pleased with this piece of pleasantry, which gave great amusement to his cringing courtiers. "For the benefit of the afflicted," as the advertisements have it, "we give a little incident which may afford a useful hint to some that need it. While Dr. Andrews was one of the divines at Cambridge, he was applied to by a worthy alderman of that drowsy city who was beset with a sorry habit of sleeping under the afternoon sermon. and who, to his great mortification, had been publicly rebuked by the minister of the parish. As snuff had not then come into vogue, Dr. Andrews did not advise, as some matter-of-fact persons have done in such cases, to titillate the sneezer with a rousing pinch. Wonder if Jerry or Jimmy the Swaggart knows the people who translated the King James. He seems to have been of the opinion of the famous Dr. Romaine, who once told his full-fed congregation in London that it was hard work to preach to 2 pounds of beef and a pot of porter. So Dr. Andrews advised his civic friend to help his wakefulness by dining very sparingly. The advice was followed, but without avail. Again, the rotund dignitary slumbered and slept in his pew, and again he was roused by the harsh rebukes of the irritated preacher. With tears in those two sleepy eyes of his, the mortified alderman repaired to Dr. Andrews, begging for further counsel. The considerate divine, pitying his infirmity, recommended to him to dine as usual, and then to take his nap before repairing to his pew. This plan was adopted. And to the next discourse, which was a violent invective prepared for the very purpose of castigating the alderman's somnolent habit, he listened with unwinking eyes, and his uncommon vigilance gave quite a ridiculous air to the whole business. The unhappy parson was nearly as much vexed at his huge, wasted parishioner's unwanted wakefulness as before at his unseemly dozing. Bishop Andrews continued in high esteem with Charles I, and that most culpable of monarchs, whose only redeeming quality was the strength and tenderness of his domestic affections, in his dying advice to his children, advised them to study the writings of 3 divines, of whom our translator, Lancelot Andrews, was one. He died at Winchester House in Southwark, London, September 25th, 1626, aged 61 years. He was buried in the church of St. Savior, where a fair monument marks the spot. Why didn't they put him in the pauper's grave so his testimony could continue? Having never married, he bequeathed his property to benevolent uses. He had property. John Milton, then but a youth, wrote a glowing Latin elegy on his death. This translator of the King James hardly qualifies with the criteria of a good clergyman that the news media is laying on us. We better dig him up. And bury him under the streets of some poor section of London so the poor can walk on him. And say, here lies a translator of the King James Version. With the poor as was his lot. News media needs to do a little research before they postulate themselves as experts on religion. Now, I've been teaching on church history. The Gestalt experience I'm seeking is an awareness that the church has always had problems because it has people in it. But it has survived. And it survives when people are able to separate the principles from the personages, the position from the occupier of the position, and the truth from the fluff. Now, I've jumped ahead from 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 4th century Christianity to the 16th and 17th century, the translators of the King James Version of the Bible. There seems to be an attitude abroad in the land that to be a preacher, you've got to be a jerk, a retard, and totally poverty-stricken. Well, the news media is not noted for careful research into matters religious. And I'm carrying on my one-man battle to prove that their characterization of what the ministry has to be is not necessarily correct. Now, these King James Version translators were a notch or two above Jimmy Swaggart. So I started with Lancelot Andrews, born in London, 1565, reading from Translators Revised by Alexander McClure. Had one of the first Greek scholarships of Pembroke Hall in the University of Cambridge, and this bears repeating each half hour. Once a year at Easter, he used to pass a month with his parents on vacation. During this vacation, he'd find a master from whom he learned some language to which he was before a stranger. He enjoyed the favor of Queen Elizabeth. She appointed him to Westminster. King James admired him equally and appointed him chairman of the first committee of ten that started on the Old Testament portion, beginning with the first five books and on into the Kings. He died in 1626, aged 61 years. For the last two half hours, I've been reading a little thumbnail sketch of his biography, and I'm not going to review it again. If you stay listening tonight, probably the earlier portion will replay again. John Milton, then but a youth, wrote a glowing Latin elegy on his death. As a preacher, Bishop Andrews was right famous in his day. He was called the Star of Preachers. I'm sure that had something to do with his appointments. Man's gift maketh room for him, and the perks that went along with it. With Queen Elizabeth, then with King James, and then with King Charles. Thomas Fuller says that he was an inimitable preacher in his way, and such plagiarists as have stolen his sermons could never steal his preaching. Pious and pleasant Bishop Felton, his contemporary and colleague, endeavored in vain in his sermons to assimilate his style, and therefore said merrily of himself, I had almost marred my own natural trot by endeavoring to imitate his artificial amble. Let this be a warning, this writer says, to all who would fain play the monkey, and especially to such as would ape the eccentricities of genius. Many hours he spent each day in private devotions. Jesus said, pray in secret. Give in secret. He was one in whom was proved the truth of Luther's saying that to have prayed well is to have studied well. His manual for his private devotions, prepared by himself, is wholly in the Greek language. This praying prelude also abounded in almsgiving. He had money. Usually sending his benefactions in private, as from a friend who chose to remain unknown. He was exceedingly liberal in his gifts to poor and deserving scholars. His own instructors he held in the highest reverence. His old schoolmaster, Mulcaster, always sat at the upper end of the Episcopal table, and when the venerable pedagogue was dead, his portrait was placed over the bishop's study door. This worthy preacher was much given to hospitality, and especially to literary strangers. Yeah, we're in good company given to libraries. So bountiful was his cheer. But it used to be said, my Lord of Winchester keeps Christmas all the year round. I wonder what the news media do with this. He once spent £3,000. Now, that's a lot of money in the early 1600s. He once spent £3,000 in 3 days. entertaining. King James at Farnham Castle. Oh. What if the IRS would consider that a proper expression of a church? His society was as much sought, however, for the charm of his rich and instructive conversation as for his liberal housekeeping and his exalted stations. I said this earlier. Nothing wrong with church people creating kings in their society. I said this earlier. Very poor countries, third world countries, keep nice embassies in Washington, D.C. It goes with the territory. But we are chiefly concerned to know what were his qualifications as a translator of Bible. He ever bore the character of a prodigious student. One competent judge speaks of him as that great gulf of learning. It was also said that the world wanted learning to know how learned this man was. And a brave old chronicler remarks that such was his skill in all languages, especially the Oriental, that had he been present at the confusion of tongues at Babel, he might have served as interpreter general. In his funeral sermon by Dr. Buckeridge, Bishop of Rochester, it is said that Dr. Andrews was conversant with 15 languages. And the news media would have us believe that all preachers are worthless, shiftless, retarded bohunks. They haven't done their research. And just because of the Jim Baker affair, you don't have to let yourself get intimidated as a churchman, as a Christian, to testify to the value we place in the things of God. It's the right of a church to collect money and build a house of gold if it wants to, as a testimonial to the value of the things their church represents. And that goes for people that want to testify that they can build a Christian Disneyland. It's their business. I'm real glad I said that. Now, if you want me to continue, there's a lot of translators. These little personalities are rather interesting. You get on the telephone and call me if you want me to continue. The next one is John Overall, and he didn't wear overalls. That was not a nickname, that was his name. You see, the problem with the current church world is the kind of people that are occupying the pulpit, and the news media is missing the entire point. I mean, the Jim Bakers, they're nouveau rich, you know. And what else can they do? The issue is not how much money they got. It's them. But their people like them. Jim Swaggart. Maybe finished the third grade, I don't know. Jerry the Fat. I mean, what major university did he graduate from? There are some giants that have...
This is the end of side three. For the rest of the teaching, please turn the tape over for side four. Thank you.